Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
Well, we reunite the great Jimmy Kimmel and Kevin Ryder of Kevin and Bean to get to the bottom of what just happened after 30 years plus of working at K-Rock and abruptly fired. Jimmy has some very, very strong thoughts about it. And we also talked to Matt Schulte. He was featured some on local TV and on Fox as well. 32-year-old man came down with the coronavirus. And you may have seen him on TV, and we just go through step by step, like when he was infected and how he got through it, where he's at now. So you guys will sort of have a little bit of a template of what might happen if you get it, if in fact you're not compromised. All right. First, I'll tell you about LegalZoom taxes. We all have to deal with those taxes. Well, I would say this time of year, but I think they bumped it back a little bit. But either way, it's coming, baby. And if you're a business owner, it's critical to know your options. LLCs, DBAs, S-Corps all mean different things when it comes to taxes. LegalZoom, don't worry about doing all the legal work yourself. Find the right answers. Use LegalZoom. Mike Lynch, our own Mike Lynch, set up his private practice and his LLC through LegalZoom. Dawson's work with them as well. I believe Gary Smith as well. And if you're dealing with Mark Garagos, he'll tell you, if you don't need him, go to LegalZoom. LegalZoom, they got a ton of resources, including a network of independent attorneys and tax professionals as well. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, so you'll save time, save money, and avoid those costly hourly fees. Right, Dawson?
Whether you need to incorporate, form an LLC, or set up your business another way, use LegalZoom to maximize your business's potential and make your accountant happy. Go to LegalZoom.com today to get your business on the right track for 2020. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. The Toolbox says goodbye to the gambler. You know, the guy with way too much plastic surgery and a chicken franchise. Played the down and outlaw in a few movies. Well, if you have to ask, Kenny will answer on The Toolbox.
I broke the law and I used a gun. Broke the Ten Commandments one by one. Always wished that I'd had a son just to teach him not to. I lived in the valley and I hid in the hills. I stole moonshine from illegal stills. Folks said don't rile him cause he may kill, but only if I got to. All I want is Tennessee bottle.
From Adam's house, and Gina's house, and Brian's house, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Jimmy Kimmel and Kevin Ryder. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, it wasn't him who started that old crazy Asian virus. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in and hanging with us through the trials and tribulations of our times. I want to thank Rode Mics for getting us all these mics last second so that we could go ahead and broadcast from where we are safely. I'm in my theater. Thank God I finished this piece of shit downstairs in my house.
Gina Grad, where are you?
I'm in my house in our little office back here that looks like an asylum because Andy had the entire thing padded with white foam just to deaden the sound. So I do feel like I'm in an asylum.
Oh, now that's not for acoustics. One of his gal pals bruised her forehead also when he was behind her.
Why can't it be both?
And Brian, where are you?
The way to kill a coronavirus is to stick a hairdryer up your nose.
Oh, so the drops work. Chris came over my house on Friday after he went over to your house, Adam, and set me up. I got to tweet a picture of this. I've got almost my whole setup here. I got you right in front of me, which is my laptop. I got the drops here, laptop here. Other drops here, mixer here, microphone obviously here. So I am in my kitchen, one of the only rooms that we can seal off with a pocket door from the rest of the house. So knock on wood, should be quiet.
Well, I was thinking about it today. It has been 11 years since I broadcast from my house. So it's funny. Yeah. Everyone started doing podcasting from their house, right, and then they all moved into venues and studios and whatnot. And now everyone's back at their house now.
Full circle.
I was just at Dr. Drew's house doing his. So, and I can catch you up on what Dr. Drew had to say. Matt Schulte is a guest we're going to have on in a minute or so. Chris, if you have that NBC story, we can run it. So there was a story about the fourth fatality in the coronavirus in the Los Angeles area. I believe it was a 34-year-old man. They did this story. While they were doing the story, they mentioned that a 32-year-old man in the LA area had also contracted it. And I thought, I want to talk to this guy. That's Matt Schulte. And I want to know, I'm very interested in him walking us through the process of this virus, because I'm hoping that the light we can shed is not that you're not going to get it, but if you do get it, it's probably not a death sentence if you're not compromised in the immune department or elderly. So I'd like to talk to him about that in a few moments. But do you have the story, Chris? We'll play it for you.
Friends of 34-year-old Jeffrey Gregorian say that they wanted to share his story because he was the type of guy you'd never expect could die from an illness like this.
He was someone who just always had a smile on his face.
Friends describe Jeffrey Gregorian as, quote, one of the good guys.
He loved life. Nothing would slow him down. He overcame so many obstacles.
They say nothing could stop the 34-year-old University of Redlands alum, even cancer.
He got through that with almost no qualms.
So you can imagine the shock when family on Facebook confirmed Gregorian died this morning at a Pasadena hospital, just weeks after a trip to Disney World and days after testing positive for COVID-19.
It's still really raw. And it's still, it's just not real yet. And it feels like this is a bad dream or this is a weird movie.
Gazarian's friends say his passing should be a reality check, especially to young people.
He is that carefree young guy, and this affected him.
New data from the Centers for Disease Control suggests more young people than originally thought are getting the virus. In the U.S., nearly 40% of COVID-19 patients sick enough to be hospitalized are younger than 55.
I'm feeling pretty rough right now.
This is Matt Schulte of West Hollywood. He's a healthy 32-year-old who says he has the virus. He has a plea for young people, especially those skeptical about social distancing.
I just think that it's so negligent and so reckless, and I mean, you play a much bigger role in all of this. It's ridiculous to me.
Now, the story was a little sensationalized because the poor chap who passed away at 34 had some pre-existing stuff going on. I think he had asthma and some other lung-related stuff. He just got over testicular cancer, so he was very compromised. But Matt Schulte was not compromised. He seemed very virile because they took a picture of him when he was at the gym. That's how you know a guy's in great shape. So I was interested in his story, and I told Chris, see if you can run Matt down. He's a local, and Matt is up with us now, I do believe. Matt?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So 32, young and in good shape. You contracted this during a skiing vacation, I believe, right?
Well, yeah, I was actually in Aspen for work, but yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. The pictures they showed was you on the slopes.
I made some time to obviously get some snowboarding in, but yeah, I wasn't in Aspen for more than 24 hours before I'd actually contracted it.
Do you know how you contracted it?
No idea.
Possibly on the flight to Aspen. I imagine people would speculate.
No, I mean, the airports were actually pretty empty. The flight was pretty empty. But I know that as soon as I got there, there were, I think, 3 confirmed cases of people that were still there. And I think a couple of them had just gone back to Australia, but there was a big group of people that were just there. And then they were all, one of them was a confirmed case. And then I think 10 of them were presumptively positive. And that was just all in a very tight space in Aspen.
So let's go through from the very earliest symptoms you experienced to sort of the height of it to now where you're at now, sort of coming down the backside of it. Let's just go through the timeline. When did you first feel that something was up?
So I landed in Aspen on Monday afternoon. And then by the time I'd gone out with some friends on Monday night, but by the time I was going to sleep, I was already starting to sort of just sweat and feel feverish. I didn't know if it was my body adjusting to cold or whatever. But Tuesday morning, like I said, it's less than 24 hours. I woke up. I was just sweating profusely. I was vomiting. I had diarrhea. I had chills and body aches. I had a little bit of a cough. It wasn't anything too significant. I was completely exhausted. Everything that I would do, if I would walk down the hallway, anything that I would do, it was just completely.
Have you had the severe flu before?
Nothing this bad. So I don't know. My girlfriend had the flu. A really bad flu about a month and a half ago, and she said that was worse for her.
It feels to those of us who've really been knocked out by the flu, what you experience is what we would describe if we had been knocked out by the flu.
Yeah.
Okay. So then is that Tuesday morning?
Yeah, now? That's Tuesday morning.
And you're still in Aspen, obviously.
Yeah.
So now what?
So basically it's just intense stomach cramps. I'm bedridden. Can't really do anything for the entire day. So that's pretty much all of Tuesday, running the fever. And then it was just, that was whenever my chest really started to hurt as well. Wednesday rolls around. I think I threw up maybe 4 or 5 times. So it was far less than the day before. Fever felt like it was mostly down. And then it was just like, at that point, everything was just sort of starting to develop respiratory.
Were you treating it like you had the flu, you know, lots of Gatorade and chicken soup and Tylenol or what, that sort of thing? Did you think at this point you just have the flu?
Or did I thought that it was, I didn't know if it was food poisoning or altitude sickness. I didn't know if it was my body just really reacting because I went from, I believe it was hot at the time here in LA, or, you know, hot-ish. And then I went straight to Aspen where it was snowing. So I didn't know.
So now it's Wednesday. The vomiting has slowed down a little. Maybe the flu-like symptoms have slowed down a little, but the respiratory thing is starting to kick in.
Yeah. So that's pretty much whenever all that was kicking in. It was just started to get heavy on my chest. I felt my cough getting worse. The air felt like it was just really thin, thin, cold air coming in. A little bit of a headache. And then that was pretty much Wednesday. Thursday, I felt decent enough to go up on the mountain. I was still nauseous throughout the day, but
you skied.
What a hero!
Yeah, that's a hero.
My life.
Well, I was kind of forced to. I went on the trip with my girlfriend, so I felt like the repercussions of that were going to be worse.
Well,
if I didn't get on the mountain.
No, the corona knocks you out for 10 days. The girlfriend, that's a life sentence.
Yeah.
I completely concur.
Can I ask Matt a question?
Yeah, interesting that you went skiing on the Thursday, but go ahead, Brian.
I didn't know. Yeah.
I have a question for Matt, a question for you. Coronavirus was in the news pretty heavily at that point. So when did you start to at least enter your mind like, oh my gosh, maybe I have this, or is it possible, or when was that?
I mean, I kind of knew that it was possible, but there was also, there were so many conflicting reports at the time. This was a few weeks ago, whenever they were saying that that the young people that would get it weren't getting symptoms like I was getting. So I didn't really associate what I had with coronavirus because at the time they were saying that young people weren't really infected like that.
How difficult was it? Oh, sorry. I just wanted to know how difficult it was to actually get the test.
For me, it wasn't. So I know that right whenever I was leaving Aspen, I left Aspen on Thursday.
I just wanted to say the date. You got it the 9th, I do believe.
So, yeah, I got Monday into Aspen 9th. On the 9th.
Okay, sorry. Continue.
Got into Aspen on the 9th. The sickness hit me immediately on the 10th.
March, right.
I flew back to L.A. on the 12th, which was Thursday. And I know that the day that I was flying out, they were giving out it was basically like a drive-through test in Aspen. So I was assuming in L.A. it was just going to be as simple to get. Once I got here, I found out that that wasn't the case, and other people were getting turned away left and right. But I ended up going up to Cedar Sinai on Friday regardless. It was actually underwhelming how many people were there to get tested. They had three medical tents set up outside in the basically in the driveway at the ER. There were only a few of us that were there to get tested. And I described my symptoms. I told them that I just came from a pretty heavily infected area, and then they got me through, and I was in and out within a couple of hours.
When did you get the positive on the test?
It was 3 days later, so it was just this
3 days.
Yeah, this past Monday.
Is that a standard? I mean, I know nothing's standard, but 3 days seems like a little bit of a wait. Would that happen today if someone got tested?
I don't know what they're – I know that they're doing like in Lake Elsinore, I saw that they were doing they were doing the drive-through testing, but I don't know how soon that people are getting the results. They told me initially it was going to take 4 to 5 days.
So you get it in 3 days. At that point, you go back to your place,
right?
Your condominium, your apartment where you are now, your home, to convalesce. What are those next few days like before you get the results?
Touching a lot of stuff, you know, grabbing people,
licking doorknobs.
Oh yeah, that was it. I had a small gathering of like 20 people. I came back. I had a pretty good idea that I might have it just based on what the doctors were telling me. So I just came back. I locked myself up here in the apartment. My girlfriend was with me, so she was quarantined with me, and while we were waiting for them to give me a call about the results, and then I just had people deliver groceries and food and medicine and anything.
How fast did your symptoms start mending? How did you feel after you took the test?
It was, I think 8 days. 8 days after I took the test, it was 12 after the initial symptoms hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it was the same way that they hit me. It went 0 to 100. It's almost how the symptoms stopped.
What day did they stop on? Was it the 12th?
I think that it was. Oh no. Yeah. So it would have been the 13th day.
13th day. And it just seemed to completely dissipate as fast as it showed up.
Yeah. I got prescribed more medication, just a couple days prior. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Obviously.
What did they prescribe?
They gave me an albuterol sulfate inhaler. They gave me Tesselin pills, so just basically a cough suppressant. That's what they prescribed. And then over the counter, I bought these tablets called Primatine, which is just to open up everything, cough suppressants.
Did your girlfriend get tested?
She did not, no.
Did she display any symptoms?
Mild, very mild symptoms, yeah.
Is the thought that she was definitely exposed to it, she must have caught it, for lack of a better term, but she just didn't react to it the way you reacted to it?
Yeah, I would think that would be the case 100%. If there was an incubation period, if for whatever reason I had got it in LA and taken it with me to Aspen, then she would have been there that entire time. And then obviously she was with me the entire time in Aspen. And then we came back and quarantined together.
So what do we, and you would call yourself 32 and healthy,
yeah,
and in good shape with no pre-existing medical conditions.
Yeah.
So you're a good example of what this might, how it might manifest itself in a young, healthy person that didn't have any existing pre-existing conditions coming in.
Yeah.
It is interesting that they say that the men seem to be more affected by it than the women. This might be an interesting case example of that. And then moving forward for you, now that we're at the, you know, day number 14 or something with you or right in there, did they want you to come back and retest? What do they want?
I don't know. I actually, I've been talking to the Department of Public Health every day and giving them updates on my vitals and sort of my symptoms and everything like that. And now the next time that I talk to them, I'm basically just going to figure out when or what the next move is, because I know I'm in here for like at least the next week, but I don't know if they want me to go get retested and then wait 24 hours and do that, or if I'm just waiting weeks, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to find out if you're exposed to it again, if you could re-catch it, so to speak, or you built up immunity.
Well, yeah, that's what so many people are saying, that whenever you get it, you're supposed to be immune to it. And so I don't know. That was my fear, is that I was going to basically be clear of it, and just as everybody else was finding out that they were catching it here in LA, and then I was going to go back outside and then just get it again from them. And it just becomes this whole cyclical thing. But I don't know if it works like chicken pox. You just get it once and it's done.
Well, Matt, I hope we can check back with you periodically and check on your progress and use our little canary in the coal mine to see just how this thing plays out.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I'm sorry, but do you have any plugs, or you have a homepage or Twitter account? anything you want me to toss out there?
Yeah, I basically outlined all of my symptoms, everything that I've been doing as far as medicine and treatment goes, and just sort of giving day-to-day updates on my Instagram and my Facebook. But if you want to plug my Instagram, it's just @Matt_Schulte.
It's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.
Correct. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Matt. I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, good luck.
I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of yours, so thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. It's always an interesting little experiment for us, because you reach out to people and you could either have, I know that Corolla, he's a douchebag, or there could be, oh, I know that guy, I'll call into his podcast.
It's 50-50, yeah, at best.
Oh, I know that Corolla, a douchebag, or I've never heard of that guy. It's one of those two.
Matt got us up to 50-50.
Adam, just FYI, I was checking this during the show. They, according to CNN, over the weekend, they put up a headline, FDA authorizes new tests that could detect coronavirus in about 45 minutes. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more of that, you know, maybe a couple hours instead of a couple days.
I'm looking forward to things moving quickly in the positive department, because that's the way we roll here in the United States. Whether it's a war or virus, I feel like we're really good when we want.
And we're interested.
If it's a stretch of highway between where I work and the Burbank airport, that can stretch out for 25 years. But on shit that we want to get done, we can ramp up pretty damn fast.
That's
nobody,
right.
I mean, when you really look at wartime kind of stuff in this country, when we want to ramp it up, we can ramp it up. So I'm hopeful for that. I had a philosophical thought before we hop with get on with Jimmy and Kevin Ryder, Kevin and Bean. I thought, as I was walking with my son today and taking a big hike and waving to all the neighbor people that were also out taking their dogs and their kids and mountain bike riding and all that kind of stuff, I was looking at all this as sort of a forced Sabbath for atheists. The people I know that are religious and that are pretty dutiful about taking their Sabbath seem a little more tuned, a little less stressed, and a little more even than most people I know who who are sort of atheists and don't observe any kind of Sabbath. Like every day is potentially a work day. Every day is potentially a stress day. Every day is a potential fill in the blank travel day.
Right.
I was thinking of it as a kind of a prolonged, enforced atheist Sabbath. And I've already sort of felt a little better in a weird way about my lot in life. The fact that everything is just slowed down. It's been forced upon you, and you now must go for this hike with your son instead of go perform that night at the comedy store or whatever it is. And I thought, if we learn one thing from this, possibly a self-imposed atheist or agnostic Sabbath would be a good thing.
Time
and
out.
I don't mean unplug every appliance, but I just
you don't
mean
need a Shabbos goy.
Have that once a week, shut it down. Mm-hmm. Just shut it down. And I don't know if you guys are experiencing that or feeling that at all.
Absolutely. As we record this now, I'm still going into the news station. It's the board op and the anchor are about the last people allowed in the building. So besides having to leave work, having to leave the house to go to that, it is this feeling of, like you said, none of us give this gift to ourselves mm-hmm. because the sun's right. shining. We got to make hay. We got to support our family. We got to support ourselves. We got to take care of our future. But for somebody who's not us to say no can do. It feels really restful mentally and physically.
Yeah. The version of this that I'm experiencing is we live on kind of a quiet street. I'm literally looking at it right now. And I've never seen, we've observed this, Chrissy and I, to each other. Like we have never seen so many people riding bikes, walking dogs, kids on scooters. Like it's just, it's almost nonstop and it's kind of heartwarming in a weird way.
Yes. And I've noticed a slightly higher ratio of thumbs up or how you doing
yeah,
or
lots of waves
yep. going the other way. All right. Kevin of formerly of Kevin and Bean. And then if Kevin in the Morning is on, Jimmy should be joining us in a second. Let me just hit better help. Life is stressful. Well, this is a perfect example of this. And you need to get a little help, better help, online counseling, licensed counselors who specialize in issues including depression, anxiety, complications from relationships, grief, trauma, anger, and more. Schedule a secure video or a phone session, plus securely exchange unlimited messages. Just fill out a quick questionnaire and tell them what you need, and you'll be matched with a counselor. Start communicating in under 24 hours. If you're unhappy with your counselor, you can request a new therapist very easily. No additional charge. It is BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
Adam Carolla Show listeners will get 10% off their first month with discount code Carolla. That's BetterHelp.com/Carolla. Why not get help? BetterHelp.com/Carolla.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Kevin Ryder and Jimmy Kimmel right after this.
The Adam Carolla Show salutes the winners of the COVID-19 pandemic. We're talking to you, Entercom Radio. You used the coronavirus panic and pandemic to cover your asses when firing Kevin Ryder and his entire morning show staff and effectively ending the legendary K-Rock. But hardly anyone will remember what you did because, well, it's not in the news anymore. So while we're all losers, you are the winner of COVID-19.
Kevin is up and Jimmy is up as well. Kevin, thanks for joining us and thanks for being a part of this.
Absolutely.
Jimmy, thank you as well. I love the John and Yoko approach you're taking to this. Looks like you're laying in bed.
The only place I can get away from my children right now.
I love the mini monologues, and you can watch those every night on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube as well. And Kevin Ryder, well, he's got a mini monologue going on in his head every night about the same time. I thought it'd be fun to talk about, take a little walk down memory lane, but we should also ask just how everyone's dealing with this on a daily basis. So, Kevin, what's your day like?
My day now is like I sleep as long as I can, then I get up and watch TV, and then I sleep some more, and then I get up and watch TV.
And Jimmy?
It's the opposite of that. Actually, it's weird. I thought this would be like kind of a break, but it turns out I'm the central hub for everyone at the show, sending me everything and figuring out what we're going to do. So it's no fun. And then I got the kids and all that stuff on top of it. So I've just really, the conclusion I've come to is that my housekeeper and the children's teachers both need raises.
I haven't, like, people are measuring out their days at home by hours and days and weeks. I have this new unit of measurement, which is I'm getting up off my sofa. I'm walking into my bathroom with my shirt off, and I'm measuring how long the red line that's just below my man titties is stretching around my rib cage. Because all I'm doing is watching TV and eating, and every millimeter this grows, I get a little older. Yes.
Hold on. I thought we weren't going to masturbate during this. Now I have no choice.
Wait, I have a question. Is Jimmy in bed?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I'm in bed. I'm in bed. The kids have taken over the house.
I thought it'd be fun to talk about some of those old stories from back in the day. But I also thought, Kevin, you should give us exactly what happened when they let you go after all those years at K-Rock. I know you called me a week and a half earlier and you said they canceled April Foolishness. And I said, why? And you said they didn't tell me why.
No, they didn't tell me why. But then I found out as the days went on that they did it because the ticket sales were poor, they said.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd only been on sale for like 9 days. So we still had almost a month to sell tickets. So we were like, all right, that doesn't make sense. And right. Then they said, oh, and they explained it to us in detail. Oh, because of the coronavirus, just like your little promo said, no one will notice. Mm-hmm. Let's just not mention it. It'll go away. And we said, that makes no sense, but okay.
Did they let you go over the phone the night before, but said you could come in and say your sort of final piece on Friday?
Yes. Not on Friday. They asked me to, it was Monday. We didn't work. Tuesday, they asked me to come in by myself with beer mug. So we went in, did the show by myself. And then Tuesday, as soon as I got home at 10:30, they called and said, oh, by the way, you're fired. And I can't remember what else they said, something about they hope to keep me in the family and maybe I can do something. So I didn't fully understand that. And then they said, do you want to say goodbye? And I said, oh, when? Friday? And they said, no, tomorrow, meaning Wednesday. So basically then I was like, all right, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to go quietly, whatever. It sucks, but I've had a good run. And then I found out Tuesday night that they had fired everyone, including all of our staff and the part-timers and everybody else. And then I just went crazy. I just lost my mind.
Well, it was incredibly eloquent, by the way, your goodbye speech.
I got to be honest. I wrote it out because I'm not known for eloquence.
You mean for Kevin, it was eloquent.
Yes.
Oh, didn't I say that?
It was implied.
Adam, we can't hear your thoughts.
I mean, I figured that was an assumption, yes.
So, Jimmy, you show up. My mind is blown that you showed up at K-Rock and Kevin and Bean a mere months before I showed up. Is that correct?
Maybe like 8 months or something like that, I think.
What was your first day?
January of a night. It was a week after the earthquake. It was the end of January, 1994.
So I showed up probably end of April, beginning of May.
Yeah. No, it was a month after the year. It was February, now that I think of it. Yeah.
So, yeah. You were just there 2 months before me.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's right. Yeah.
That's all the time it takes Jimmy to get into a fight with somebody and need a trainer.
I thought of Jimmy as a wily veteran who'd been there, you know, a seasoned journeyman who'd been there. He'd been there 9 weeks before I got there.
Yeah, but I was seasoned a journeyman at the 9 other radio stations I got fired at.
Kevin, what was your first impression of Jimmy when he showed up to the job?
I mean, I love Jimmy, and if I remember correctly, we had talked to him before, but we had no idea the day we walked in, no idea that Jimmy was sitting in a conference room. We were like, oh, hey, I guess you're working with us now. All right, great. I mean, he seemed funny. Didn't know that much about him, but liked him. And we were like, all right, let's go.
Yeah, it was weird. Everything at K-Rock is weird. But I just want to say, before we get into the positive portion, which, of course, we should focus on that. The fact that these guys, Entercom, Kevin, give me some names here. Who are the bad guys in this deal?
I mean, you want the bad guys at K-Rock or the bad guys above them?
Whatever, whoever. Anyone who thought it was a good idea to fire board ops. I mean, a board op is someone that operates the board at the radio station. That person is required. You have to have someone in that spot. The idea that they fired these, you know, low paid people just as this horrible plague descends upon us is just, it's just, I mean, that is horrible. I hope that they have enough integrity that they are ashamed of themselves.
I want to say quickly, it's despicable. Brian, give me a call after we wrap.
Okay.
Just real quick. Sorry. Go ahead, Kevin. I didn't want to write that down. Go ahead.
No, what happened was as soon as I saw that everybody was let go, I called my boss back, who had just fired me. And I said, his name is Mike Kaplan. And I said, dude, why would you be firing Destiny? We hired her like 2 months ago. She's probably the best board op you'll have. You don't need any more board ops? Like, this doesn't make any sense to me at all. And this is when he still took my phone call. And he said, well, it just needed to be done. And I said, why? And he said, just did.
Yeah, no explanation.
Nope. Wow.
So, Kevin, would you like to call out any names that we should publicly shame?
I mean, there's Mike Kaplan, the program director, and there's Jeff Fetterman, the general manager. But I don't know that – I assume – everybody in Philadelphia at the Entercom sort of knew about it. Seems like the program director had come in 3 weeks before he fired us all. That seems like a pretty quick move if he didn't have any backing, but I don't really know.
I hope when the day comes, and I hope that it's soon, that Jeff Fetterman and Mike Kaplan are eliminated from that horrible company, that they get a similar treatment. And then they'll be like, oh, dude, yeah, man, they did it to me. And I'm like, yeah, no, they didn't do it to you. You did it to me.
Radio. I mean, it can go nowhere.
By the way, Adam, radio. Adam, you know those guys. You know these radio guys are. I just want to give them a little shout out because I know Jeff and this Mike Kaplan are watching right now, and I just want you to know that you're a couple of scumbags. And Jeff, I've known Jeff Fetterman for many years, and I'm very disappointed in him.
But Jimmy, my problem, honestly, is of course with them, but you know, like every radio station is run that way. You get fired.
That's fine, but you get fired over the phone after 31 years. I mean,
yeah, that's exceptional. Sure.
You know, I mean, it's not like it's crazy. It's not like you're like some loose cannon that they have to, you know, throw you out of the building, that they had guys waiting to escort you out of the building. I mean, that's an insanity.
Yeah. You know, what was funny is there were three of them, and I didn't really look, but there were three guys there, and I was trying to tweet and get my stuff ready to go, and one of them said, we're here to escort you out, and I laughed, and I just thought, that's funny, like somebody would escort me out, and then they go, no, we're serious, and I looked up, and it was one guy that I know and I loved, and he said, yeah, no, honestly, we have to escort you out.
Wow.
So then he sort of walked with me, and I was like, dude, I really appreciate you. It's been great working with you. You're one of my favorites. He said, you're one of my favorites, and he followed me out to the door, and I was like, you literally have to watch the door close behind me, don't you? And he said, yes, I do. Wow. And I said, in a strange way, that's really a perfect way for my career at K-Rock to end.
Yeah, I want to say this.
Kevin, I've been escorted out of a number of buildings.
Right. I'll catch up, Jimmy. Give me some time.
I've been with male escorts, but I think that's different than what you fellas are talking about.
Three at a time, too, though, right? Escorts
and fellas and three at a time, but it was different. So do you remember? So obviously, the thing I'm interested in getting is I remember first seeing Jimmy and when I first met Jimmy. And I remember when I first met Kevin and Bean as well. But I'm trying to make sure it's the same in their mind's eye. So when I met you, Jimmy, it was on the ninth floor of the old K-Rock building in Burbank. And in my recollection, you were coming around the back hallway where the back door was, where you had the key card. Is that correct?
Yeah, somebody told me that there was a guy out there who wanted to talk to us, and so I went out there. And it was
Let me just say this. Why would Jimmy go outside if he just says, there's a guy out there that wants to talk to us?
You know, we didn't exactly run a tight ship at that time.
I do you remember who that guy was or what his business was in the building?
Oh, I think he was just you know, one of the engineers or something like that who was there working or something. It was just, there was a knock on the door, somebody was headed out to the bathroom, and somebody just told me, you know, I would that's the sort of thing I would do. I'd go and deal with people outside the studio.
Kevin.
Yes.
What is your plan moving forward?
A lot of people are asking me that. I mean, I did just get fired Tuesday. So honestly, after 31 years, I really don't know. I mean, I have some ideas of things that I'd like to try, but I feel like I owe myself, I don't know, a couple of weeks to sit around and not do anything and sort of figure out what I want to do.
Sleep in.
Can you?
I'll probably race Formula One. How about that, Adam?
Oh, F1. I was just watching that special on Netflix last night.
Yeah, I was just kidding. I'm not going to race.
Not all. Oh, you're going to do Formula Atlantic or Formula Ford?
Kevin, have you talked to Bean about this?
I have. We've been texting back and forth. He's like, what is going on?
Oh, you've been texting, but no conversations with Bean.
I mean, Bean hasn't had a conversation with me off the air in 20 years.
They've talked enough.
That's who I am. Is there any possibility you might move to London to be with Bean again?
No. No, I'm very happy in Southern California. I don't have any interest in moving to London.
Is that room that you're in right now a place where cats live?
No, it isn't.
It is not. Okay, because it looks like a big scratching post.
Oh, I don't know that guy in bedroom should be making fun of me.
No. Yes, that's guy in bedroom.
That's a human bedroom.
Kevin.
Hey, let's tell a couple more stories about Kevin and all this.
They don't have to be about me.
No, they should be about you. Why are we talking about Adam? And this is your special day because Bean got a big special show and you got nothing, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, nothing. Jimmy, that's not true. I got a phone call.
You did get a phone call, from those motherfuckers. Yep. Those motherfuckers.
So, Jimmy, in all honesty, does that surprise you at all?
Yes, it does. It does.
Does it really?
I guess I haven't been there, in a while, and I know that with Lisa and Ralph, things were handled very badly, but it still surprises me. I mean, just knowing that there's going to be here's the thing. If you're a program director or a general manager of a radio station, you should be at the level that you know that the way you do things is just as important as what you do. And firing someone who has been a great everything for you, not just successful, reliable, easy to deal with, kind, to fire someone in that cold way indicates a lack of common sense. It indicates that perhaps they are not up to the job of running what is one of the greatest radio stations of all time. And I'm sure that will prove it.
I just want to say this again, that I was not as angry for myself as I was people who are working by the hour that are going to have to go out now when all businesses are closing down and look for jobs. That's what set me off. I strangely made peace with it. I was like, well, that is a really crappy way to handle things. But what about the people that are hour to hour and they have no reason to fire them? It made no sense to me. And that's when I got completely angry. And I just thought, look, I made a decent amount of money. I had a good living. I'm not the one I'm worried about. Those people are literally out on their asses for no reason. And I don't get that.
Kevin.
Yes.
Are you set up financially so that if you wanted to retire, you could?
I probably should work for a while, but I'm well along that path. And that's why it sort of doesn't, I'm not scared at this point, I'm sort of looking back and I was like, look, what an unbelievable career I had for 31 years. And sure, it ended in a crash landing, but had I known that, I still would have signed up at the beginning and done it because it was crazy fun. But I have a different situation than everybody else that was fired.
Well, also, it's not only that you had an amazing 31-year career or 30 plus a bunch of months at K-Rock, but you will never capture that time again mm-hmm. where everyone is tuned into the same radio station, driving into work. You know, it's almost in a weird way, it's like being on Johnny Carson as a comedian in the 70s or something. Like, people are spread out. They got their earbuds in. They're listening to a million different voices. And you were not only there for an amazing period of time, but probably the best window. I mean, it's a pretty big window. It's like a sliding door, 30 years. But you're also there in a time that we can never recreate, really, in history.
That's anymore. True. And I've been thinking about what we created and what we went through and what all of the experiences we had in Southern California. And it really made me think, I'm sort of sad that there's nothing like that anymore. And with the way society is all split up and music streaming and everything else, and I don't know that it ever will be again. And so, yeah, I'm really grateful for what happened, but I'm also a little bit sad that it's not possible anymore.
Jimmy, do you have any stories, any Kevin stories you'd like to share with us?
You know, one of the best times we ever had was Kevin and I decided, I don't know, maybe 3 days before the Olympics when they were in Atlanta, that we wanted to go to the Olympics and broadcast from there. And all the hotels were sold out. And of course, even at that time, you know, K-Rock, they were very cheap. You know, never no money was ever given for anything. So we decide that we're going to stay at a random person's house. We get the phone book and we start calling people in Atlanta. And we reach this old man named Charlie Brown. We're looking up names like Charlie Brown.
This is 96, right?
1996,
like
yeah.
Oh, 96. Yeah, he was old. He was probably.
No, it was 1996. Yes, and year. He was 96.
And he was 96.
I know.
Yeah. Richard Jewell, right.
Yes. That happened the day before we headed to Atlanta. So we call this guy, we go in the white pages and we look up this guy, Charlie Brown, and we ask if we can stay in his apartment. He's like in a senior living apartment or something. He says yes. So Kevin and I get on a plane and go to Atlanta where there are no hotel rooms to speak of, expecting to stay in this man's apartment. And we ring his building and the intercom. And no one's answering. And we have like his daughter's phone number and we call his daughter. We have to go to a payphone to do it or something. And we call his daughter and she's like, yeah, no, my dad, he's old. You're not staying at his house. And Kevin was so mad. Kevin's like, he told us we could stay here. Jimmy is arguing with this woman on the phone.
Jimmy, what would make us think, yes, this is a good plan, this old man will let us stay with him?
What would be good about staying with him in the first place in some apartment? So, you know, he didn't have a guest room, Eric.
That's true. We'd have to share a bed with him.
So Kevin, somehow, I don't even remember how you figured this out, but you somehow wrangled it so we were able to stay in some rich person's house. We rented a room in the house of the guy. This guy owned the house Coca-Cola was invented in. He showed us he took us in the basement and showed us the like table and vault where the guy, Dr. Pemberton, invented Coca-Cola. I mean, it was crazy. And do you remember what happened on the way when he picked us, Kevin?
Oh yeah. Oh, that was the sweetest thing in the world.
He picks us up. We never heard of Krispy Kreme donuts. And he starts talking about Krispy. He's like, yeah, and in the morning, you know, I'll get you guys some donuts. And we're driving by Krispy Kreme and the light comes on, the, you know, fresh donuts light. And the guy goes, maybe we'll just pull over right now and get them right now. And so we go into and you can tell this guy has got a donut problem. We sit down and he goes, don't tell my wife. Do not tell my wife. We're headed out to dinner. the three of us sit there and we polish off a dozen donuts and we buy two more boxes of donuts to bring home. And then we get to the house and his wife just knows, like, we have the donuts and his wife looks at him and she's like, did you guys stop and eat donuts? And he goes, no. And she turns to us. She's like, did you guys stop and eat donuts? And we had to lie, but we weren't very convincing.
Well, we didn't know he was going to literally get in trouble from his wife. We had no idea.
The guy was in trouble by his wife. It was completely crazy. It was a crazy trip, the whole thing from beginning to end. And then we spent the rest of the trip, instead of going to the Olympics, in the parking lot of Richard Jewell, in his parking lot of this guy who was accused falsely of bombing the Olympics. And we ordered him a pizza in front of the media. A delivery guy pulled up in front of his house, in front of all the world media. That was a good one.
I have vague recollections of that because you guys were broadcasting all through that, right? Like, yes. Bean was just back in Burbank, right?
Yeah, Bean didn't want to go with us.
What?
I wonder why.
Hey, Kevin, I have a couple of thoughts Jimmy was talking. I was writing down a couple just random thoughts that I haven't had in 20 years.
Yes, sir. And,
couple things. First, I feel bad for outing the donut guy now on this show, but he passed in 03, so we don't have to worry about him. These are thoughts of, do you remember this?
Okay.
I remember when we were all driving from Seattle into Vancouver to interview the folks from the X-Files.
From the X-Files, yeah.
You got a speeding ticket in the rental car.
I wouldn't have gotten a speeding ticket.
Oh, then who was driving?
I'm a law-abiding citizen.
Oh, you got the speeding ticket.
Okay.
We got pulled over on the way. I don't know if you remember that, Jimmy. We got pulled over on the way to Vancouver from Seattle. Here's a random one. Me, you, and Jimmy went to see a Lakers game on some weeknight on a Wednesday night. You drove. I think we all met up, like, maybe at the station or something, and drove to see a nighttime Lakers game, probably at the Forum. Then at some point in halftime, they had the T-shirt cannon and they're firing the T-shirt cannon up into the upper deck. I jumped up and snatched it out of the air, made a nice catch like you would with a foul ball at a ball game, had it. But I'd only known you for about 5 or 6 weeks. And I thought, give it to Kevin so you can ingratiate yourself with him. So he'll have you back on the show. And I handed you the T-shirt.
Did you felt sorry for me, didn't you?
I felt like whatever this T-shirt is worth, $9, you could get a lot more than $9 of goodwill with the guy whose name is on the morning show if you hand it to him.
No, you felt like there was a little kid with a ball glove, and you reached right in front of him and grabbed it, and you were like, oh, I look bad now. I should give the little kid the ball.
But you do remember getting that T-shirt at that game?
Yes.
Because it must have been shortly after we'd met. I don't think I knew you very well then. I remember we all piled into your Lexus, but it was only like a two-seater with like kind of a boot in the back. And we just drove it all the way out to the
I remember forum. Kevin was the first guy who had any money, really, that I knew. And Kevin would drive around with his top down and the air conditioning on. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, who has this kind of money that they could drive that's around blasting the air into the world?
Jimmy, honestly, though, you know for a fact that had I had that same car and the top down and no money, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's just bad judgment.
How long was Frank Murphy your producer there? How many years did he cover, from what year to what year?
That's a great question. I'm going to say 90. I'm going to be wrong, but I'm going to say 91 to 94 or 5.
Do you guys remember that? Oh, he must have gone later than 4
no,
or 5.
No, it's possible.
He was there for a little while
was there. Yeah.
He was there. Yeah. He was there for a couple of years after I got there.
Jimmy, so do you remember Frank and his weird, like, germophobic thing? I'm not even sure it was germophobic, but if he had the newspaper sitting on his desk and we opened up the top page to look at top page 2, he's like, it's ruined. Throwing it out. It's ruined.
Oh my God.
Why would you do that?
He also, if you threw a gum wrapper, and not even the inside part, the outside wrapper of the gum into his trash, he practically would hold his nose and pick up the trash can and walk it outside to the hall to throw it away. No food trash was allowed in his trash can.
And he would yell, "No food trash." And we're like, "It's a wrapper. What are you talking about?"
He had rules. And if you broke his rules, you're in trouble. I remember Jimmy getting screamed at by his wife when he had broken his arm running down the ramp to get into the underground parking. He had a cast on his arm, but he drove an automatic, and we couldn't figure out why he couldn't just get up in the morning and drive in. His wife had to get up and drive him in. Jimmy, you were being pretty relentless about him and the broken arm and something of that nature. And at some point, I think she just went nuts on you. Does that sound about right?
It was on all of us, really. She grabbed the phone from him and she said, "Will you let him take care of his arm, please?" I think you guys used to play that drop a lot.
Let me add something to that, is that Frank tripped, broke his arm. I believe it was his left arm. He did have an automatic. And not only did they have his wife get up for a full month to take him to work, but they had to get the kids up and put them in the car as well and drive him to work.
And this is at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yes. For a month.
Because Frank couldn't drive. And she would also bathe him as well.
I do remember the bathing part as well. I remember it was probably behind Frank's desk or next to it where Jimmy took the piece of Canadian bacon and put it up with the thumbtack for 1 year before he consumed it. Can you verify that, Kevin, how that went?
Exactly? Yeah, he put that up and he said, "What?" And he said, for some reason, I don't know why this popped into his head, "Well, 1 year from now, I'm going to eat that." And we were like, whatever.
Bean got an Egg McMuffin and it had bacon on it. And Bean is a vegetarian. So he pulled that weird circular piece of McDonald's bacon off his sandwich and just set it on the side. And I just picked it up, and I don't know why I had a hammer and a nail, but I nailed it to the wall. And I said, 1 year from today, I will eat, if I'm still here, I will eat that bacon.
Why would you say that? Like, what makes a person think that way?
I don't know. I like to pull tricks on myself sometimes.
A year later, Jimmy pulled it off the wall and ate it.
1 year later, probably wrote the date under it on a post-it or something like that.
That's right.
Ate it 1 year later. Yeah. I remember in that same office, you getting choked out by Booger Man. That's something that's very vivid in my mind. I love that.
That was another one of those things that, like, things happen and they happen quickly. And even if you're paying attention, it's like, okay, I don't even know what's going on right now, but Jimmy's up against the wall and a guy named Booger Man who lives in his van has his hands around Jimmy's neck, and maybe I should do something, but I'm so stunned I'm not able to move. It was awesome.
And nobody was able to move. It's amazing. No. And do you remember when Screech and his friend came into the show?
I do.
And I had to physically throw them out, and I dragged them down the hall.
It was one at a time. They came in, and they were making like little sounds, like little inside jokes to each other. And we kicked out Screech's friend, and then Screech kept doing it. And we're like, dude, honestly, like, and Jimmy ended up having to drag him out. Imagine Jimmy being our security.
Adam, do you remember when we got separated and we were no longer allowed to be in the studio at the same time like children?
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember that clearly. I remember as I sort of...
Do you remember what we did?
No, tell me.
Well, we had, I don't know, I don't remember where it was, but it was some promotion. We met an attractive young couple who had told us they were interested in getting into the... pornographic film industry. And so Adam and I wrote a script for them.
Oh, that's right.
Act out over the phone. And we faxed it to them. and then we were giving them direction, and it was filthy, you know?
Yes, I now remember that.
Yeah. And then at the end of the show, Tripp, the general manager, said that we're no longer allowed to be in there at the same time.
Like, that would solve anything. And by the way, the other thing is, that was in the 90s, and Howard Stern worked for our company, and the company was obsessed with him, and we could do almost anything we wanted. Nobody cared. And yet somehow Jimmy and Adam got in trouble.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah.
I remember walking through the hallway with the phone banks on the right as you come in from the back door with the vending machine on the left, and then Frank Murphy's office being sort of straight ahead, and then Jimmy having this little alcove with the tractor feed and the printer and the computer and just banging out sports reports. I always remember being really impressed by this, like how you just bang them out, rip them off the tractor feed and run in seconds, like while your theme song was being played, and just mow right through two pages of tightly spaced dialogue without even a hiccup. To me, that was, for a guy who couldn't read or spell or type, that was the most impressive thing I'd ever seen. And I'd never seen anyone do it because I hung out with Ray and Chris and guys who would throw shit in my ear. I'd never seen it done. How many did you do? Two of those an hour?
Yeah, or two more? An hour. Six in the morning, two an hour.
How long? I mean, it seems like those were two or three pages sometimes.
Yeah, they were about three pages long usually.
And you would literally just bang them out and print them right there.
All the other stuff in between, you know.
Yeah, I mean, especially when it came around to producing the producing the Christmas album and all the theme songs.
Or even
and
just
stuff.
calling in and doing the dumb characters and with doing Mr. Bertram stuff and all that stuff.
Adam, you know exactly what that's like, because once you started with us, we were just flying by the seat of our pants, and look at that. And you were doing the same thing. You just sort of make it up as you go, and whoever's good at it, Jimmy happened to be good at it, you happened to be good at it, stood out.
But the reason I was more impressed with Jimmy is I was writing beats down on a pad, like just the beats, you know, and the fact that he could write it all out and read it that fast and didn't sound like it was scripted, to me, that was insanely impressive.
Well, I had, one thing I can't remember is scores and numbers and stuff like that. So I had to have all that information there.
That's not important for a sports report.
I remember I had another very clear thought, but I want Jimmy to corroborate it or tell me what his version of it was. His two piece of advice is don't drive the van. You'll become the van driver if you drive the van. I wanted to drive the van at some point. And another point, he told me you got to learn to edit by cutting tape and taping it together, literally putting it on your thigh, using the razor blade and all that. You'll be very valuable or more valuable if you can learn this. And I remember thinking, how long can that go on? And that's the only time I ignored Jimmy's advice back then. I was just like, we got to move forward. The computer's going to replace us. But Jimmy, you cut a lot of tape physically, right?
Yeah. I mean, for the first like 8 years of my radio career, when you made an edit, you had a big, we call the pancake of reel to reel tape, and you had a razor blade and this special tape, and you'd make the edit and you put the little piece of tape you cut out on your knee in case you had to put it back, in case you screwed the edit up, you know, and that's just how you did it. And I remember when we got that digital technology, I felt like so much of my life had been wasted, you know. It was really like, it was disheartening. I was like, oh, okay, now this is how it is, I guess.
Jimmy, you should have asked Adam. He apparently saw that coming.
There was a machine. We had one, but yeah. John Frost was always on it.
He was the only one allowed to use it. Yeah,
he was doing the important stuff. We were just messing around.
Does anyone know where anybody is today? Does anyone know where Frank is, where John Frost is, or Boogerman? Or
I know where Frank is. Frank does a morning show in North Carolina, I think.
I thought it was Tennessee, but I'm not positive.
You're probably right. I don't have
John,
Frank's information.
John Frost does a lot of imaging work in LA. A ton of it, yeah.
Yeah, I think he did like Premiere Radio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those guys, right. John Frost still might be the most talented person I've ever worked with at any job.
He used to do the whole detective thing, remember?
He was the guy who did all those little world famous K-Rock, you know, all that stuff, like all those funny little jingles, and they were always good. You never heard one and thought, oh, that sucked.
He was great, but he also did, Kevin, what was the detective he would do from way back in the day? He'd do the voice. He had his, like, Asian sidekick character.
Yeah.
The new detective.
That was cool, what was it called? Asian sidekick character?
Yeah. It was the new detective.
Yes, the new detective, yeah. And he would do all the sound effects. He would do all of the voices. Like, remember when you walked in and you saw Jimmy writing out his sports and coming in and do that? He would do that on a whole nother level with production and sound effects and all kinds of special effects stuff. And he would put it all together so that it made complete sense. And it was a miracle.
Yeah, I know. That guy is, I don't know. I feel like he's like, it's like, when you go to Benihana and you see the chef and you go, God, that guy's incredible. And then you leave and and he never gets the credit he's due. John Frost is an amazing talent.
I think he's been working and is still working, producing stuff for radio stations. I mean, he's still an amazing talent.
I looked him up. He's actually working at a Benihana's.
Oh, my God.
He does that the onion sad. Volcano.
Yeah, that's weird. Weird coincidence.
All right. Should we give everyone a plug and you know, make a vow to do this once a year and keep caught up with everyone so we don't lose track of each other like Michael the maintenance man?
Do we have to wait until I get fired from my other job?
No, we can do this as much
as we want. If that's what we're waiting for, I could probably make that happen.
I will be very curious where you go and who's talking to you and how that's going to shake out. So keep us posted.
It's sort of weird, Adam. I got to be honest. I'll just say this quickly. It's sort of weird because a lot of people are contacting me and a lot of people want to know what I'm going to do. And honestly, I'm just trying to get my feet underneath me and I have zero idea what I'm going to do, but I feel like I've got a little bit of time to figure it out. So I'm very grateful for that. But I would also like to say before we're finished that all of the little people on our show, all the people who are getting paid hour to hour, they're not little, they're normal sized humans. They're the ones that are really going to have a difficult time right now. And that still is what angers me about what happened.
Yeah.
Jimmy, when do you go back or do you know, or do you have any idea?
We don't know. Every night I'm doing a little monologue thing and we'll just wait till it's safe to gather, I guess.
Mini monologues, and you can find it at Facebook. And where else can we find them? I don't have the paper.
YouTube, mostly. YouTube is kind of the main home of those things. Sorry, my TV just went on mysteriously. These are the many pitfalls of.
All right, Jimmy. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much. And thanks for getting us all caught up and taking that walk down memory lane. We'll do it soon.
You bet. Thank you, Adam. Again.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Kev. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Max Pat, do I have any business here?
Like on this earth?
No, just a break and Rotten Tomatoes next.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Rotten Tomatoes right after this.